This Easter season, we're offering a special downloadable resource that will inspire you and deepen your faith. He Is Risen is a digital booklet featuring powerful articles from The Stand and AFA Journal that explore the life-changing truth of the resurrection, the significance of Easter, and how to share these foundational truths with others. For a limited time only, it's our gift to you for any donation of $5 or more. Help us continue to share biblical truth, defend Christian values, and equip our families. Visit afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on this Monday, April the 21st, 2025. Thank you for listening to this radio program and to American Family Radio. In studio with me today, Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
That's it, people. Just three. That's it. You got one third of a brain.
Or we got three brains, and it's triple the brain power.
And we're going to bring it.
Oh, we're bringing it.
We're bringing it today. So today is the day after Easter, and around the world yesterday, Ed?
Yes.
You said Christians all over the world celebrated yesterday.
Yes, this is, there is sometimes a disagreement amongst Christians on which day should be considered Easter between Western Christians and Eastern Christians, so Eastern Orthodox and then Catholic and Protestant. And it has to do with how you determine how many days after this and the spring equinox and all sorts of things. And I used to know it, but I don't know it anymore. Anyway, yesterday was Easter for everybody. I don't think there were any exceptions to that. So both Eastern and Western Christians celebrated the resurrection on the same day. So that's
amen.
That doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes it does.
So the Pope passed away, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the leading international story right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about it. We're looking at least four networks that are talking about it. This will be the story throughout much of the day because, if you've not heard yet, Pope Francis passed away at the age of 88. He was the first Latin American pontiff, meaning the first pope from that part of the world. He passed away at the age of 88. Fox is doing live coverage. This has pretty much been the story all morning on that work. CNN is sharing messages from people like President Trump, who's telling the pope to rest in peace. MSNBC is on it, BBC. This will be the big story. And on our website, we have a little bit of the passing, as well as the rites and rituals following the death of a pope. In other words, the process now that people are going to go through to select the next one.
So you said President Trump is telling the Pope to rest in peace?
Yeah, or President Trump, rest in peace, Pope Francis. That was his message. Fox yeah. also has that.
Pope Francis passed away. Did he pass away yesterday on Easter Sunday, or was it last night, overnight?
It's described as happening on Monday.
Okay.
I thought
Easter
that myself.
Monday, I think it's like overnight.
Yeah, I was confused about that myself this morning because of the time difference between us and Vatican City. That's 7-8 hours.
Okay, so what does this mean, Ed, for the Roman Catholic Church?
Well, they would go through the process, which is, I guess, hundreds, some they would say 2,000 years. The process of selecting a new pope. So I'm not sure what that process is. It has to do, I think, with the College of Cardinals.
And, yes, it does.
And there actually was some couple of series on this kind of process here recently on, I think, Hulu. I have not watched it. But
are you going to?
I might now. I mean, I don't know if there's no objectionable stuff in it, I might, but
does it interest you that much?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
I'm just
to
being
educate
honest.
Yourself, you might.
Yeah. It's there is a lot of ritual with these kinds of things, because it is a for the Catholic Church, it's a solemn responsibility to be prayerful and selecting. And then there's something. This is really sad because I did go to an all boys Catholic high school. Our Catholic listeners.
That's why I'm asking you these questions.
There is something in Vatican City. If they vote and select a new pope, there's white smoke,
right?
I think, and then if not, if they cannot decide, I think it's black smoke. In other words, they're still in the process. But I don't even know if that process had already begun because Pope Francis had been sick for a while, and so I don't know whether there was considerations.
Wasn't he the first non-European pope?
In 1,300 years. I think it's been a long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe the first from Latin America.
He was.
But he was the first non-European pope in 1,300 years.
So anyway, they'll have his funeral services, I guess, tomorrow. I don't know when.
Yeah, this is going to carry on for days.
Yeah. I mean, it's, what is it, 1.4, how many Catholics are there? 1.4 billion or something, I think.
Yeah.
It's a lot of Catholics and you know, that this they'll be in mourning. I'm not sure how long that process goes on either.
Mm-hmm.
So,
of course, he replaced Pope Benedict the 16th, who stepped away from the position back in 2013 because of an illness.
And before that was John Paul, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so not to I'm going to talk in generalities about the Pope.
Yes.
Okay. I guess generalities, perception. And his thoughts and ideas. I'm talking about the Pope that just passed away, Francis. Okay. There were a lot of Catholics who did not like him for his politics. I remember one of my friends expressed displeasure with the Pope. He was a Catholic. The fellow was Catholic.
Are you asking if the Pope's Catholic?
No. That's a trivia question. Is the Pope Catholic? That's my trivia question today. No. What I'm saying is there are a lot of traditional Catholics, I guess you could say, who did not like his politics because his politics were very, very liberal in many ways, talking about the Pope.
Yeah, you know, to me, this is proof that your faith does intersect with politics because Pope Francis, in general, I think, had a more, what we might consider a more liberal interpretation of Scripture, which led to his more liberal political views on things like immigration and other hot-button topics, controversial topics in the news. So to me, this is proof that you can't escape your faith or your non-faith if you're an atheist in how you interpret and decide.
You know what I didn't
like?
The Pope Francis, Pope Francis was the fellow who just passed away,
the church
leader of the Roman Catholic Church. He was critical of the United States of America, especially President Trump, for his immigration policies. That is, not allowing everybody to come here.
Mm-hmm.
Right, who wants to come here to the United States? And I thought, well, you're not letting everybody into the Vatican City to set up makeshift camps.
Right.
And believe me, there are a lot of people who are coming in from North Africa in particular and the Middle East, coming into Italy, so much so it was a crisis for a while. It may still be. I'm not sure. They were coming in from land and sea. And I didn't ever see Vatican City, who is a sovereign nation, by the way.
Right.
They weren't welcoming everybody in to their museums and their, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that was a bit hypocritical, seemed to me. It's easy from afar to say, okay, United States, you need to take everybody in from around the world because they're immigrants and you need to be compassionate. That's the Christian thing to do.
Right.
Ignoring the Christian compassionate thing to do is also to have law and order.
Right.
And protect people, protect our citizens. But it just seems like Pope Francis was forever critical of the United States in our attempt to control our borders.
Yeah.
I say forever. He criticized often the idea of controlling your, of denying immigrants, you know, entry into America without due for law process.
And this is why people considered his views as being on the left side of the political and religious spectrum, because those who say what Pope Francis said about things like immigration will point to certain scriptures in the Bible, whereas those who will say, well, the government has to protect its people and those kinds of things, uphold the laws, they'll look at passages like Romans 13, and that's generally viewed as being on the conservative side of the political spectrum. So, you know, I don't we're not being unfair to the Pope. He had his biblical arguments, and those who believe similarly to Pope Francis have their biblical arguments, but those are generally on the left side of so these cardinals will hold what's called the conclave, and that was, I think that was the name of the series I was trying to remember. I think it's just called Conclave, and so when they vote, I think the cardinals have to be under age 80 to be a part of the conclave. And
really, that's ageism.
Well, I think the reasoning there is that you got to have a stake in what's coming for the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm that's my guess. And then out of you know, the Sistine Chapel, I think they burn the ballots when they after they
that's
count
the reason
them.
For the smoke.
And then so there's white smoke release from the
you don't want to get that wrong chapel. Either, do you?
If
you're the guy who has to put the ballots in, you don't want to mix them up.
You remember a few years ago for the Oscars? Remember someone read the wrong winner?
Oh, yeah.
And then they had to say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I made a mistake."
My bad.
Yeah, you don't want to get the thing wrong.
Yeah,
the whole world sees black smoke come out, and you're going,
"Right,
what? What?
Yes,
is that what I meant?"
All right, next story, Chris.
Well, let me mention this real quick. Related to this, the internet is already abuzz with who they think may be in line to replace Pope Francis. This is an AI compilation of various
Brad
things.
Brad Pitt.
Oh, no. Brad Pitt's not on there.
No.
But reading from the list here, there's a guy named Pietro Parolin. He's apparently the current Vatican Secretary of the State. He's being seen as a moderate continuity candidate because he worked closely with Pope Francis. Then we get into some other people that would be the first or the first in a long time. There is a gentleman by the name of Luis Antonio Tagli. He's the former Archbishop of Manila. He is the he would be the first Asian pope. There's a black man by the name of Peter Turkson, who is supposedly in line. There's also a couple of American cardinals, Raymond Leo Burke and Sean Patrick O'Malley, that may be supposedly in line for Pope Francis' seat. We shall see.
Yeah. So the for those who don't know or familiar with Catholic governance of their church, the cardinals are the let me just equate it this way. If you have a president of the United States, such as President Trump, and then you have a, then underneath him would be the governors of the 50 various states, right? So equate that to the Catholic Church. You have the cardinal, you have the Pope, who is the president, as it were, and the cardinals are the governors. So does that make sense?
I think that's probably pretty close.
So they're
advisors for the Pope.
And they're over various geographical areas. Mm-hmm. Like in the United States of America, we may have, I don't know, five or six cardinals are over various areas of the country in terms of the, it's very hierarchical. I'll let you go for that one.
It's hierarchical.
Structured.
It's what Dad said right there. It's a church, so it's a very highly structured church.
Yes.
So anyway, we'll see what the cardinals do in terms of selecting a new pope to lead the church.
And by the way, that makes sense because you have bishops over certain areas, sometimes over particular cities. And so if you got 1.4 billion Catholics, you got to have some organization. You know, priests have to be able to go to their bishop and ask questions.
Then they go to the archbishop, and then they go to the cardinal.
Yeah. So So all right. That does make sense if you have been in existence as long as the Catholic Church and have to oversee a religion as a part of the Christian faith that's as large and with as many people in it as the Catholic Church.
Next story, Chris.
All right. Let's bring it back home to the United States of America, where there is a news story. This one is from Reuters, and their headline is this: Pentagon Chief Pete Hegseth shared sensitive Yemen war plans in second signal chat. This is according to a, quote, source that told Reuters, Secretary Hegseth shared details of a March attack on Yemen's Iran-aligned Houthis in a message group that included Hegseth's wife, brother, and a personal lawyer. This is the second signal chat situation in which someone was given access to information on a private chat that included at least one member of the Trump administration. The issue here is Hegseth supposedly also included his wife, brother, and lawyer on this very personal private phone call. The White House weighed in on this morning on Fox and Friends, and White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt dismissed this story as a, quote, lie. Clip 12.
The president stands strongly behind Secretary Hegseth, who is doing a phenomenal job leading the Pentagon. They are lying about the Secretary of Defense. Let me reiterate, no classified information was shared in these chats. But you do have leakers who are leaking classified information, which is a crime, I will add.
Okay, for those who don't know, because I didn't know before this happened a couple, 3 weeks ago, Signal, S-I-G-N-A-L, is a app that is used for private conversations. Is that correct?
Yes.
Kind of like WhatsApp?
Yes, but that, very secure, supposedly.
Yes.
Okay. So I don't know if this was a phone conversation. That's the way you said it.
It wasn't. It was a chat.
Like a group chat message.
Yeah, it was
a group chat. Texting.
Phone. Yes.
And so the accusation is that Secretary Hegseth included his wife and what? His brother-in-law?
His brother and his lawyer.
A lawyer in a chat having to do with the time, place for attacking the
Houthis
in
Yemen.
Yemen with military force. U.S. And of course, he's Secretary of Defense. Mm. That's what she's talking about. No, what did she call it? No classified information was. Anyway. I like Hegseth and Secretary Hegseth, and I know people who know him well, and they speak highly of him. So I don't know what to think about this. Is this a fake story, or is this something he shouldn't have done? I don't know. That remains to be seen, I guess.
And I don't know the answers to those questions either. And of course, the White House is defending Secretary Hegseth. I will say that if this is true, I'm not sure how to solve this problem. I mean, you can't have a lot of times you can't have phone calls where you're discussing sensitive information like military strikes on Yemen, because those can be intercepted.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's got to be secure ways to communicate. You just got to be careful about how you're doing it. I mean, we talked about this when the first signal group chat issue developed, is it's very easy to hit, you know, reply all when you're emailing or when you are texting, because we all get busy and we're all going 50 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. And then you go, oh, I didn't mean to include that person in the long list. But you can't do that when you're talking about military strikes. So,
also, excuse me, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's
related to this is the fact that in the last few days, there have been some people dismissed from Hegseth's inner circle. I'm talking about walked out of the Pentagon with their cardboard box.
Right.
Huh?
Right.
You had. Okay, according to Fox News, top aides to Hegseth were placed on leave and escorted out of the building as the Pentagon probed unauthorized leaks. That's what she was talking about. That's what
Caroline Leavitt.
Yeah, was talking about. Senior Advisor Dan Caldwell, Deputy Chief of Staff Darren Selnick and Colin Carroll, Chief of Staff to Deputy Secretary Stephen Feinberg. So on Friday evening, those three employees were fired. Two defense officials confirmed to Fox News Digital. That's pretty serious.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, three.
That's
three,
intentional. That's not accidental or even careless.
Right. They were fired. These were three high-level Pentagon positions surround that people that would have surrounded Hegseth. So
to me, that's all.
I don't know if he hired those people or if they were there left over and from the previous administration. You know, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if this is technically correct in terms of what people like this can be charged with, but that's not much different than spying. Now, it might not be handing, it may not be leaking things to other countries, which is treasonous, but if you're leaking it to the news media or the Democratic Party, you know, the political opponents, with the hopes that they are able to run with it and undermine Hegseth or President Trump, that's like spying in your an official government position. And then the Department of Defense, that seems extremely serious to me. I don't know whether that rises to the level of treason. Probably not, but it is still like spying. If you're leaking things that you know your boss wouldn't want you to leak, you're spying for someone.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad they got fired if they were doing this, because it's not accidental and it's not careless.
Probably what you'll see, too, is some sort of news reports on like MSNBC or CNN quoting unnamed sources with knowledge of the situation at the Pentagon. Or maybe they'll bring in one of these individuals and do the whole voice disguise, let's shoot him in the dark so we don't know who's talking to us kind of thing. This won't be the last time we're talking about it is what I'm trying to say. And it may not even be the last round of terminations. This could be a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Next story, Chris.
Well, I do want to bring this to people's attention because we need to be in prayer for our fellow Americans, especially in states like Texas and Oklahoma, where a slow-moving active storm system brought heavy rain, large hail, and tornadoes to parts of Texas and Oklahoma over the weekend. At least three people are dead. It could rise as authorities go through the damage in various places there. But bottom line, storms on Easter Sunday, you hate to see those kinds of things. And while we're praying for the president and all kinds of people in government, we need to be remembering those that have to deal with things like this after Easter.
Yeah. Well, springtime in the South, right?
Yeah,
in the Midwest, too. It's always going to be stormy because of the just the weather patterns. But, yeah. That's sad that that happened to those folks.
17 reported events Saturday of storms in just Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is, I mean, those people must be pretty hard.
They're living wrong. Is that what you're saying, Ed?
No,
I'm trying to help you there.
No, I was.
You wanted to say it.
That's not what I was wanting to say. I was saying they're a hardy breed.
They're
like, don't they call that Tornado Alley?
Yes, and what's interesting is the southeastern U.S., Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, we've actually started to get more storms on average per year on an annual basis, however you want to say it, than places like Oklahoma or Kansas, Nebraska.
Arkansas gets hit a lot, Missouri.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of right through the middle of the country.
But Oklahoma's known for the big tornadoes, too.
Right.
And the ground's relatively flat, so it just sits on the ground.
And I saw a movie once, Kansas. They have tornadoes once.
You saw a movie once about that?
I saw a movie. There was this girl, and she was running. I can't remember the name of it.
You know, a lot of
she was running with her dog.
Yeah. It'll come to you.
Yeah.
It'll come to you in a minute.
There was a wizard. I don't remember exactly.
It was the Wiz.
Tragedy is not funny.
You're right.
We don't mean to make light of that, but storms in... You know, as long as there's springtime, there's going to be storms in Oklahoma and Kansas and the Southeast because of the clash of the cold Canadian air.
Right, those Canadians.
Yeah, the Canadians.
Oh, they're cold.
And so, and then the Gulf moisture coming up from the, and then they
from the Gulf of
America. Meet in the middle, and it's ugly.
Yes.
Huh? It's ugly.
Gulf of America.
It comes up from the Gulf of America. It does. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Ed Vitagliano, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network clinics saw 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work. Your caring, tax-deductible donation saves lives, so please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Chris, we hope you had a wonderful Easter weekend celebration. And just hope everybody, you know, enjoyed the services yesterday.
Well, we had a great service at the church that my wife and I attend, Hope Church here in Tupelo. We have a great pastor, Scooter Noland. He serves on the board, AFA board of directors. The worship was just really, really great. We went to a Saturday night service. They asked some of our regulars to
go. Not only Catholics did that. Evangelicals are doing that now?
That's funny to say that because, first of all, we had Saturday night because our pastor asked some of our regulars to go to the Saturday night to make room in the sanctuary for the influx of, you know, once a year.
Christmas, Easter, Christmas.
Yes. So we did that. We go on Saturday. But it's funny you say that because on the way, my wife said, well, isn't this what Catholics do? They go to Mass.
Saturday night.
And I said, well, I guess that's probably, you know, true. But it's funny that she said the same thing. But anyways, wonderful service. I hope everybody.
We go to the same church you do, but
yes,
we paid no attention to the.
You didn't go on Saturday.
No, make room for visitors.
And technically, we should celebrate the resurrection any day of the week.
Yes, that's true. So,
We just went Sunday morning at 10:30.
Yeah, your regular time. You weren't going to be inconvenienced by those.
Huh? Visitors?
Did you have to move to a different pew? It was funny. In our congregation, we had people that were sitting in, like, different parts of the sanctuary but just because of the visitors and stuff that we had. So all of a sudden, these people that sit over, like, on my far left are now next to
me. They didn't know that was your place to sit, right?
Oh, I mean, it's fine. But it does throw you off a little bit sometimes.
I'm going to confess something here. I mean, we all know we can be petty. I'll speak for myself.
Okay.
I can be a petty Christian.
Yeah.
Okay? And when Brent's nodding, our producer, Brent Creeley, our former producer, Brent Creeley. sometimes we have like a lot of people who are coming, and my wife and I have a spot where we sit normally, and I like being on the aisle. If I have to get up and go to use the restroom, I don't like climbing over a bunch of people.
I understand.
So I'm on the aisle. We get there so that we can sit. And then sometimes our pastor will say, okay, we have a lot of visitors this morning. Everybody scoot towards the middle. I just am openly defiant.
Right. That's not a good attitude. But you
Scooter
confess
mentioned
it,
that
right
to me one time
I'm
in the
confessing.
Hallway.
I'm
what are we going to do about Brother Ed?
Yeah, well, I got here early enough.
So you have a specific place you sit?
Yes. That's right. Okay. It's kind of like
we have a little area.
A little area.
Yeah, a little corner area. Yeah. But not like that seat right there.
No, we have a particular seat,
and you walk up, and if it's taken, you're
oh my goodness. That's huh? It's back. Hey, pal, you're going to have to move.
Bless your heart.
Unless you want to go greeting. Out to the parking
That's
lot.
That's a good greeting for church. I'm sure they'll come back. Hey, pal.
Hey, pal. Hey, guy.
What are you doing?
So we used to, in New England, it was always, hey, guy.
Hey, guy.
Hey, guy. But it's been a long time since
You want to move? You want to move it on down?
Hey, how about moving?
Yeah. All right.
Your
well,
shame if something
and then,
happened
and then people
to your tires.
Say, what is your name on this pew? And then that, I think that's why they started putting names on pews back in the old days.
Back in the old days. Yeah,
you know, I'm serious. They started putting family names on pews.
I know.
The churches.
I know. I was a pastor for many years. Yeah. I know how this thing works.
I know. My pastor has shared the story, though, before about how it kind of throws him off. Like, at the end of the service, you'll call on somebody to pray, like, close us in prayer. And if some family has moved to, like, a different pew, like, it throws the pastor off because he's used to, you know, Blaine being over here.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, he's on his complete opposite direction.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next story, Chris.
Well, we were mentioning this going into the break. I have an update. Continuing coverage, if you will.
Okay.
But before the break, we were discussing this Reuters story that says Pentagon Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth shared sensitive Yemen war plans in a second signal chat. For those that didn't hear the story, the scuttlebutt with this particular issue is Mr. Hegseth may have...
That would be Secretary Hegseth.
Secretary Hegseth included his wife, brother, and personal lawyer in this signal group chat, which...
He responded, and we got it?
Yes. We do have audio of Secretary Hegseth himself.
You know, what a big surprise that a bunch of... a few leakers get fired and suddenly a bunch of hit pieces come out from the same media that peddled the Russia hoax. Won't give back their Pulitzers. They got Pulitzers for a bunch of lies. Pulitzers for a bunch of lies. And on hoaxes, time and time and time again. And as they peddle those lies, no one ever calls them on. See, this is what the media does. They take anonymous sources from disgruntled former employees, and then they try to slash and burn people. This is why we're fighting the fake news media. This is why we're fighting slash and burn Democrats. This is why we're fighting hoaxsters. This group right here, full of hoaxsters that peddle anonymous sources from leakers with axes to grind.
I didn't know that Secretary was Hegseth was down at Mardi Gras. I don't know if that's appropriate or not to be walking in the Mardi Gras parade.
First of all, I was surprised. I thought he would have reached puberty by now, but I'm pretty sure his voice changed right there in the middle of that.
All right, let me just say this, okay, and then we'll move on here. that's funny, Ed.
I mean, did you guys hear
it? It's Pinocchio-esque. Yeah, it was. I agree. I don't know. He may have had something. Maybe he had a bad...
Someone bumped into
a
him.
Bad
or
coffee
something.
Or something. Like, you know, somebody bumped into. Listen, because I'm conservative,
yeah,
I want to believe what other conservatives say to be true.
Right.
That's my default position, and I think that's true of every human being. Whatever their political view is, they want to believe. Liberals wanted to believe Joe Biden was not losing his mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they ignored evidence of the truth. Yep. So I don't want to do that either. However, I would say this. did he say... In that comment, did he say the story was not true, that he had a signal that included his wife and his brother? You said what, his brother-in-law?
His brother and lawyer.
Brother and lawyer in a signal trap talking about the attack on that was supposed to be private. Mm. Did he
no,
say
I
that?
Don't think he was saying it was not true. I think what he was talking about is the leakers got fired.
Okay.
And then, now the media is coming out with hit pieces. In other words,
okay, I got you.
The media was talking to the people who
got fired. I got you.
And so he was questioning their motives.
All right.
I do want to assign to Brent, I would like from now on when I am speaking on the show, I would like some trumpets gently playing in the background.
I kind of like
that sound. It just, you could say anything.
When the saints go marching in. All right, next story.
All right, this very well could have been the lead.
Yeah.
But we had some other things to begin the show with. And we've updated our coverage on the Supreme Court and President Trump when it comes to deportations of illegal immigrants that are criminal gang members. The latest with this is the Supreme Court acted, quote, literally in the middle of the night and without sufficient explanation in blocking the Trump administration from deporting any Venezuelans held in northern Texas under an 18th century wartime law, Justice Samuel Alito wrote in a sharp dissent that castigated the seven-member majority. Over the weekend, the Supreme Court ruled that Trump couldn't do what he has been wanting to do here, and Justice Alito dissented to that, as well as Justice Clarence Thomas. We do have some audio on this, but I'll pause here. Any concerns that about what I just mentioned?
You talking about the Supreme Court ruling?
Yes.
I'm just gonna confess a little bit of ignorance here. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna confess this. This story is starting to confuse me. Okay, in terms of who has what authority. Okay, it seems to me that the chief executive, the president, has the right to, under laws like this Alien Act, it's old, from the 1800s, mm-hmm. to deport people who he considers to be part of an invasion. On the other hand, I do understand the concern with due process. I would hate for a person who is innocent of being in a gang to be transferred out and deported to an El Salvadoran gang. But it seems to me
you mean that prison, El Salvador in prison.
Prison,
you mean?
Yes. Yeah. It seems to me that this this guy Garcia, is that his last name? That he was determined to be a member of a of MS-13. So I'm not quite sure why the Supreme Court and other courts, I guess those some of those are active as judges, why they are making these kinds of rulings. It to me. It's like the president. If President Trump told the Supreme Court, I am ordering you to reverse your ruling on this, the Supreme Court's going to go, no, that's not your job. You're not allowed to do it. And I'm thinking the Supreme Court doesn't have the right to do what it's telling the president to do.
What are they doing it in the name of? Was it 7-2?
Yes.
That's a pretty good margin of 7-2.
But Alito and Thomas dissented. And I'll agree with Samuel Alito and Justice Clarence Thomas all day, every day on getting the Constitution right.
Yeah.
It's ironic that all three of Trump's Supreme Court justice appointments went with the majority.
Yes.
Yeah, it's ironic but not unexpected.
Right.
Because Judge Roberts, who's the Chief Justice, Amy Coney Barrett, well, I guess Brett Kavanaugh and and Gorsuch.
That's what I'm saying.
This is, I don't know what to make of this, but in my mind, if President Trump ordered the Supreme Court to change its ruling, all of us would go, you can't do that. And I'm thinking the Supreme Court doesn't have the authority to tell the president he can't execute the laws.
So I agree with you. This is confusing, this story and this whole deportation, the big story, and what can the president do and can he do, and what law is he authorizing be enforced, and so forth and so on. So 7-2, the Supreme Court, which I didn't know there was a hearing coming up before the Supreme Court.
Oh, no, this was like a middle
en banc of or what, not en banc. What do they call it? So this was done without a full hearing.
Yes,
this
sir.
Was just an emergency ruling.
Yes, I'm going to post a couple of things from AFN.net on our Facebook page. The first one is about the decision, and it says the Supreme Court on Saturday blocked for now the deportations of any Venezuelans held in northern Texas under an 18th century wartime law. And it goes on to explain that Thomas and Alito.
They had to turn the buses around. Mm-hmm.
They did. And I'll share that too because Tim came across that story from
video footage.
Yes.
In Abilene, Texas, I think.
Yes.
They were getting ready to ship them out and put them on an airplane back to Venezuela, I think. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court order came down.
Because this is that Tren de Aragua gang, Venezuelan gang.
Yes,
in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you, Ed. I don't know how the. I would be interesting to. So this is not a Supreme Court decision
for all time.
This is just a temporary
the time being.
Yeah, injunction, if you will.
I think part of the reason why it's confusing and nobody really knows the answer is because people drafting our Constitution in the late 1700s never envisioned this. They thought government was only going to be so big instead of this big, huge monolith that it is now. That this nobody envisioned somebody in their late 80s would be in the House of Representatives or a senator, all these kinds of things. I'm not saying we need a new constitution because that would be the worst
thing. And this is why people talk about activist judges, and it's not just on the Supreme Court. Other federal judges, you sit there and you go, well, it's not your job. It's not a part of the federal judiciary's job description to tell the president what he can and can't do unless it involves some violation of the Constitution. And we have separation of powers for a reason. This is why I say we would all think President Trump was nutso if he said to the Supreme Court, reverse your ruling. Well, that's not your job. The Supreme Court has its job, but the chief executive has his job. And for the court to be saying, no, you can't do that, to me seems to be breaking through on that separation of powers. This is very strange. And we mentioned in our story meeting, I don't know if you got the figures on this, I saw posts all weekend after the Supreme Court made its ruling talking about the amount of deportations that other presidents, including Democratic presidents, have made without judicial interference. It's like all of a sudden the judiciary is taking an interest in deportations that the executive makes under current law.
Yes.
And it's just very frustrating.
Hey, related to this, have you guys heard about this something called the Real ID?
Yes.
Yes.
I've been covering this for a while.
Okay, what is this?
All right,
Chris?
Real ID is something that involves post 9/11 legislation that was signed into law by then President George W. Bush. The idea being that it would put all the states would come up with the same kind of driver's license. And Real ID, once it takes effect next month, and I'll get into that in a minute, it's going to basically help take steps to ensure that people are who they say they are when they enter, when they try to fly or they enter a federal building. So this was post 9/11 legislation designed to protect people by helping cut down.
Post 9/11. It's been like 20 something years ago.
Yes, they had
to
basically.
Is this under the Patriot Act or is this a different act?
It's from that same era.
Okay.
I don't know that it's directly
connected. How come we're just not hearing about it?
Well, because they put states basically on a timetable. Hey, you got to get your ducks in a row and start doing this. There were some challenges and things like that. Now, Kristi Noem, who is now the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security, put out a video in recent days saying, hey, Real ID is going to take effect on May 7th. You're not going to be able to board a flight or enter a federal facility without a Real ID. So,
okay, so is my driver's license a Real ID?
Does it have a gold star on the top?
I checked mine.
Left or
mine
right?
Does.
Yeah.
Do you have your
not on me?
On you?
Yeah.
In the car, you mean to go get it?
It's, yeah. If you pull out your driver's license, because I did this morning.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been meaning to check it.
This
pulled
is important
mine
because
yes,
people have travel plans.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I pulled it out, and in the upper, I'm pretty sure it was in the upper right-hand corner, there is a star, which means it is a Real ID.
Correct.
And I think they can, is this, Chris, similar to, like, if I pull out a $20 bill, it has a little strip, an internal strip that validates this is a valid legal note, $20 bill.
It's similar to that, yes.
So this is something that cannot, under most circumstances, on the driver's license be fabricated.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Now, there are groups, including one that's based in Minnesota called Citizens Council for Health Freedom, that disputes pushes from the government saying you have to have a Real ID in order to board a flight because Twyla Brace, who heads up Citizens Council for Health Freedom, has forever told AFN that you could still board a flight with things like government-improved passports
yes,
and things of that nature. It might take more of a headache for you to actually get on the flight. Their concern at Citizens Council for Health Freedom is that this could pave the way for like a China-like social credit type system where a future administration might require you to have real ID for all kinds of other things. That's
and
their concern.
And there's concern, do these real IDs have a chip in it, or is it just a mark on the ID that is like a watermark or something like that? Because here's if there is some sort of chip in your driver's license that allows the federal government to track you, okay, now then that becomes kind of problematic for most people. Although other people I've heard arguing about this say, well, they can track you by your phone.
They're already tracking.
They're already
or
tracking
they can.
You. Yeah, or they can. They check. They track you when you use a debit card. This is a tough thing because the argument in favor of this is you can figure out who's here illegally. You can determine if somebody is faking being an American citizen or a Chinese national. It's easier to find criminals. I understand all that. Okay. At the same time, as you said, Chris, what about another Biden administration who, not just him, but someone who is like him, who doesn't like Christians, who's hostile to conservative Christians, how they can track you, they know where you're at, then they come after you.
Right. That is the concern, because every administration's actions could and will often be used as precedent for another administration to say, well, so-and-so did it, nobody cared.
Right.
There is some confusion over real ID in the sense that, for example, last Friday, Fox News went hard and heavy with Real ID, and they quoted people like Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky and even former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Thomas Massie was quoted as telling Fox, listen, if you thought Real ID was some sort of issue to ensure voter integrity, you're going to be sorely mistaken. Nobody has ever said that it's going to ensure you are who you say you are at the ballot box. This is the stated purpose for it from the government, is to ensure that somebody doesn't pretend to be somebody else to get on a flight and then try to take it over. But the concern is this can and will be used in the future by some other administration to require you to have this and this to be able to do all kinds of things beyond just flying.
So if I want to travel, I got a plane. I got a flight in June. I need to go out when the show's over and check my driver's license, see if I got a star.
When did you get your driver's license?
Have you gotten it renewed in the last couple of years?
When I was 15.
No. No, I mean, when did you, Chris asked the right question. When did you last renew your driver's license? Is it within the last several years?
I've got to renew it next year.
It's probably already compliant. Mississippi and a number of states have already moved towards real ID compliance. Odds are it has a star at the top of it. A little gold star.
Okay.
Now, you can travel with a passport.
I do have a passport.
Yes. And that could work to prove who you are as well, because that has a photo. Your passport or passport book has at least one photo of you. Some passports now have a color and a black.
But the point is that a real ID, which is what the Christy Noem and others are talking about right now, a real ID is beyond just a driver's license. It's a driver's license with a star.
Yes.
Yes.
And you got to have that, or they're not going to let you on the airplane. That's what you're saying. And that's going to be traumatizing to people who go to the airport for their vacation this summer and can't get on the plane if they don't have this.
Very true.
And I think it's scannable. Okay, that star or something in the driver's license can be scanned. In other words, you can't go down and talk to Billy, who's behind the KFC, and get a fake ID.
For example,
I wonder if this is in part to counteract the blue states who are giving driver's license to illegal aliens. You know some of the blue states are giving driver's license to people who are here illegally.
I don't know if they're giving real IDs or not. That's a good question.
If they're
giving real IDs, that's problematic.
Yeah. We have been airing a story today on AFN. I know radio-wise, we've aired a couple of real ID stories already. Once that posts on AFN.net, I'll share it on the Today's Issues Facebook page. It is a big story, and you're going to be hearing more about it between now and May 7th, because that's the day it's set to go into effect.
And we're just talking a couple of weeks away.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's been I've been here almost 15 years now. I've been covering real ID for at least 10 years here. And the concern's over.
That's just, you know, that's one of the stories I've missed. I just haven't.
I'm the same.
Have you been? Yeah.
Well, I wasn't paying attention.
And see, that's to Tim's point. People are going to show up at Reagan National Airport right. or wherever going, I've never heard of this. What right, do you mean right. I got to have a star on my license?
Yeah.
You know, Chris has been living this alone. You know, with this, he's been
bearing his burden.
He's had this story for how many years have you been covering it?
I would probably say 10 years. I mean, I've been doing interviews on this and the concerns over it since
and here we are.
Obama
and,
was.
And yet, Ed and I evidently have had our heads in the sand.
You know, it's a tough place to.
Like the proverbial pelican.
The pelican with its head in the sand.
Is it the pelican?
No, I'm pretty sure it's the ostrich.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that one. Uh-huh.
Now that pelican might identify as an ostrich, which is a
by the
bird
way,
of another story.
We're coming up here on a break, but tell our listeners you mentioned AFN.
Yes.
That's what does that stand for, and how do why do we do this? How do people get tied into that?
Thank you very much. AFN stands for American Family News. The great thing about AFN is that it's radio and print news. So if you like to get your news audibly, listen to us at the top of every hour on American Family Radio and about 100 non-AFR stations that now air our radio newscasts.
Sure.
You can also find those stories and a whole bunch more on AFN.net for the print version of all that information.
Chris, if someone wanted to go back and read your archived stories of the last 10 years about the Real ID, where can they do that?
Yeah, you can go to AFN.net and type in Real ID in the search box at the top of the page, and you'll find all that information.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I'm doing it right now. Real ID.
I'm going to go to my car
here at AFN.
Information will appear. We've updated our website a few times.
See if my driver's license has got a star on it or not. So if I got a star, I'm good. If I don't, I'm going to be denied entry.
And you could probably face an uphill battle to get on the plane.
And I do have a passport, though.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Here's stories.
That's what you want. Hey.
Yeah.
I'd read them all. I'd just take a few hours and read them all. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues after this short break for news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.